Costner in Middlesboro, Kentucky on March 18th, 1999. The interviewer is Betsy Brinson, and it's being conducted in the Days Inn in Middlesboro. Well, thank you, Ms. Costner. What can I call you?
Esther.
Esther, thank you for meeting with me today. I want to start with some background information about you, like what year were you born and where were you born?
I was born here in Middlesboro, May 15th, 1943.
So you have a birthday coming up pretty soon.
Yeah.
Right. Can you tell me about your family? How did your family come to this area originally?
My parents, well, both of them were born here. My mother was born here. My father was born in East Bernstead, Kentucky, which is outside of London, Kentucky. But his family, my father's family, originated in a place called Morganton, North Carolina. And how they actually got here, I don't know, but his grandfather was a Baptist minister, and my understanding, he moved into this direction, in this direction, and his children followed, which I think most of them were adults by the time they came to, or young, maybe teenagers or something like that, by the time they came to Kentucky. My mother's mother is from Morristown, Tennessee, and her father is from Rising Fawn, Georgia.
From Rising?
Fawn.
Fawn.
Georgia.
How do you spell that? Is that one word or two words?
No, it's two words. R-I-S-I-N-G-F-O-N-D. I believe that's correct.
Okay. Can you continue? Do you know how they got, or what brought them to Kentucky?
I don't really know. I've heard that my grandfather came with his mother. He was a young boy, and they came by the way of the railroad. And it apparently took them several years to get to Kentucky to this point. I've never heard of his father. I always, you know, heard about his mother. And he had two or three brothers and two or three sisters that was with them. But I really don't know. And how my grandmother got here, because Morristown, Tennessee is just about 35 miles from here. How she got to Millsboro, I really don't know.
Okay. Did any of your family that you've heard about work in the mines, would that have brought them here, do you think?
No. My grandfather worked on the railroad, my mother's mother. No.
Do you know what he did on the railroad?
No, I don't.
Okay. Okay. Well, tell me a little bit about your growing up, your family, your education.
I have four sisters. My parents separated, divorced when I was 3 or 4 years old. My mother remarried, had four other children, but that was a problem marriage. Basically, we were raised by our mother. I'm the oldest, and she did fairly well by us and with us. You know, it was a little hard for and stuff, but I completed high school. I graduated in 1961. I had a year of college by my own choice that I did not finish. And so then my sisters, they all are high school graduates. All but one attended college, and that was by her choice. She didn't want to go. Only one of us, of the five of us, that my mother had five girls, is a college graduate. And, but my sister next to me has like 3.5 years of college, and my youngest sister has about 2 or 3 years of college. But basically married. Now I have 2 children, and my sister's married and have children. I only have one sister that lives in Middlesboro. I have one in Frankfort, one in Toledo, Ohio, and one in Arizona.
So they've all left?
They've all left. They've okay. been gone for several. Well, the one in Toledo left after marriage, so I'd say she's been in Toledo maybe 25, 26 okay. years.
I looked up the census, the number of people who live in Middlesboro, which as of about 1990 was maybe 11,400. It's a pretty white community. How many black people do you think live in Middlesboro today?
There's probably, I can't pinpoint it, but I'd right. say there's maybe less than 1,000.
Less than 1,000. And when you were growing up, were there more?
Sure. It's, economics has a lot to do with the area, and always has. And what has happened is kids graduating from high school, they left, seeking employment, military, or maybe some college and stuff, and they just never returned. You know, and it's probably worse now because employment is bad in the area, and as kids leave, basically not so much as the military are looking for jobs, most of them now are leaving, going to college, and they don't return. And families are dying out, and there's really no need for people to come back, and you know, as their families are.
Right. Okay. Tell me about your education here. Did you go to the Lincoln School?
Mm-hmm.
That was the black school?
Black school, yeah.
Okay. Tell me about that school. How many students were there? What grades?
Well, the school was from 1 through 12. It was a two-story building with a gymnasium.
And where was it located?
Not far from here, so I'd say it's on the east side of town.
Okay. Is the building still there?
No.
Or has it been closed?
No, the building was torn down not long after integration, and the integration came about here, I guess, somewhere like 64, 65.
Okay. How many students in your graduating class?
18.
18? So not a big school in terms of numbers.
Numbers, no. I wouldn't say that the school ever graduated 100 students at one time, but blacks were, there was a larger number of blacks years ago when the coal mines were in operation and stuff. And I guess when they went down, you know, that caused a lot of people to leave the area, too. But.
Do you remember any of your teachers?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about one or two of them?
Well, the lady that I had you to call, Mrs. Blackburn, was my first grade teacher. Most of the teachers now dead, but upon integration, most of them moved away.
Why did they move away?
I couldn't say for certain because I really don't know, but they probably, my opinion of it is that they probably feared being rehired.
Right. And there's certainly enough evidence across the South that was true,
mm-hmm.
that was a fear. But Miss Blackburn stayed?
Yes, she stayed. She had a family and things here. And there was another one. Her name was Mrs. Bryant, but she's deceased right now. I mean, now. I know she died back in the 80s, and I think she taught me maybe in the 5th or 6th grade, but she was, Mrs. Blackburn and Mrs. Bryant were hired into, you know, to the system. I mean, they were rehired into the system.
Did you like school?
Mm-hmm.
You did?
Yeah.
Did you have any favorite subjects?
No, I guess I couldn't say I had a favorite subject.
Okay. Were you active in any school organizations?
We didn't have any school organizations.
Did you didn't have any athletics?
Oh yeah, we had. I was a cheerleader.
Right.
We had football and basketball, and I was a cheerleader, and then our home economics class.
Was that part of Future Homemakers of
yeah,
America?
Yeah, something like that.
Right.
I had forgotten what to call it.
Right.
Yeah, we were involved in that, but any other organizations or anything like, you know.
Was there a student council?
No.
No. Do you remember the principal?
Mm-hmm. When I was in elementary school, the principal was, name was Osborne, but I don't remember when he left. He didn't die in Middlesboro, but he didn't stay in Middlesboro long after I entered school. And then the principal was Miss E.R. Ball, which she was a cousin of mine.
And what was her first name again?
Esther R. Ball.
Oh, Esther R. Ball.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Were you named after her?
Mm-hmm.
You were named after
mm-hmm.
her? Okay.
She was a niece of my grandfather.
And what happened to her when the schools were integrated?
She moved to Louisville, and she was, was hired by the Louisville school system.
Okay.
She worked there until she retired.
Okay. And what about the students who graduated with you? Did they stay? Did they leave?
They've all basically left. There may be one or two still in Middlesboro.
Miss Blackburn said to me something about there had been or there are school reunions
mm-hmm.
periodically. Can you describe those to me?
We have a school reunion every 2 years, which this year is the year for the reunion.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be held in July, and it's like a 3-day event.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a joyous time because you get to renew bubble friendships, see people you haven't seen for a while. And the same people don't come every year. Most of them try to get back, but it may be two or three reunions. You know, you may not see some of the same people, you know, but they most of them try to get back. And it's, we have elected officers. We have bank account. We give three scholarships to a graduating black student from Millsboro High School every year. And we just
a scholarship to attend college.
Mm-hmm. Any accredited institution.
Okay. And how many people normally come back for a reunion? They bring their families too,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, they bring their families. Well, I would say on that weekend, if you were trying to get in today's inn, you couldn't get a room anywhere within the area. Because, but I would say we have several hundred people.
Okay.
I can't, you know, just say how many, but we may have 600, 700, 800
right.
people that come back.
But
our membership is on the decline because a lot of the older people that attended have passed on, and we've lost quite a few within the last couple of years, you know, so. And these people were big supporters of the reunion. And this thing started in 1972. And I think in 97, we celebrated our 25th anniversary.
Okay. When you were growing up here, Esther, what was the climate like in terms of race in Middlesboro? Was there discrimination?
Yes, it was, but I'm sure that we didn't really look at it as discrimination because we didn't know anything other than you didn't go in this restaurant, or if you went to the theater, you went upstairs through the back door. Or
which theater was that?
Well, there wasn't but one. Well, there was two. And this was the Mannerin Theater. You went around to the side, you went upstairs to the balcony part. There was one that was called the Park Theater. And I don't think blacks weren't allowed in there at all.
And tell me the name again of the first theater?
Mannerin.
Mannerin.
Mm-hmm. M-A-N-R-I-N-G.
Were there instances of violence that you had heard about or witnessed?
I have never witnessed anything. The only thing that forced violence that I can remember, excuse me, anything about was I have a cousin that was playing Little League baseball. And they had won a championship and was on their way somewhere for a playoff. And he went into a drugstore with another young boy, which was white. And the boy asked the waitress, they had a food counter, for a glass of water. And the waitress gave both of them a glass of water. And the proprietor smacked the glass of water out of my cousin's hand, but you know, basically, I don't remember any incidents or anything that could have happened or occurred.
Okay. So your cousin was actually playing on an integrated school team at that point.
Now, this is like City League, Little League, that, you know, it's a summer program, mm-hmm. you know, Little League baseball.
But it was integrated at that point.
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay. Do you recall approximately what time that might have been? Is that in the 60s?
No, it had to have been in the 50s because he graduated from high school in 58, so I would say it was in the early 50s.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. So in the 50s, though, you had separate schools, mm-hmm. but yet you had an integrated softball league?
It's Little League, and Little League still exists. They have Little League, they have Senior League, and it's like when you become a certain age, maybe 7 or 8 years old, you play Little League, and then at 12 or 13, you graduate up to Senior League, mm-hmm. you know. It's a summer program that has been going on for years, you know, that some, you know, way of keeping kids occupied, interested
right.
in sports and stuff. And Middlesboro has had great Little League and Senior League teams, you know.
But it's interesting that back before the Civil Rights Movement, you actually had teams that mm-hmm. blacks and whites played together mm-hmm. on. Okay. Tell me about where blacks lived in Middlesboro. Did they live in separate communities within town? Did they live scattered out?
They were all over town.
Okay.
Maybe in, say, like Cumberland Avenue, which on the far end of Cumberland is residential. You know, there wasn't a black on it because it was just an area that you couldn't buy any if you could afford to, if you could have afforded to purchase. But blacks were all over Middlesboro.
Okay.
You know, it's not in just one section on the south side or whatever. And there, you know, there were blacks and whites in the same areas in parts of Middlesboro.
Okay. Have there ever been any lynchings in the area that you've heard about?
No.
Okay. Has there ever been any Ku Klux Klan activity that you've heard about?
No, but that doesn't say that there hasn't been. I just, you know, don't know about it.
So you graduated high school in 1961.
Yes.
And then what?
Yeah, I went to college for a year.
Where?
I went to Kentucky State.
Okay.
In Frankfort. Okay. And then I came home and just worked around. Some and nothing. And then I got married and had a baby. And basically, that's it.
Okay. What was Kentucky State like for you when you went there?
It was
a much bigger place
than Middlesboro. Well, yeah, but you know, and it's like I tell my family now, Frankfort has grown since I was at Kentucky State. You know, of course, when I went to college, things weren't like they are now. You didn't have, girls had to be in at a certain time of night. You didn't have visitation, you know, from young men and stuff like that. So, but it was nice. I enjoyed it. I made it, you know, it was different, you know. I'm in a school where you have a band. We didn't have a band in high school, you know. It was different.
Well, if you were at Kentucky State in 1962, which was certainly an active time in civil rights around the South, at that period. I mean, there were sit-ins and demonstrations and Martin Luther King. Did you know anybody on campus who was involved in anything like that?
Because I went in September of 61 and I left in the spring of 62, so on.
Okay, okay. Tell me about your husband. Is this the husband that you married when you came? Okay. And his name is?
Julian Costner.
Okay.
What do you want to know about?
Well, is he from this area?
Yes, he was born in Middlesboro. His mother is from Louisiana, and his father is from North Carolina. But his mother came to Kentucky with relatives, I think at the age of 14 or 15, or young girl. How his father got to Millsboro, I don't know. Both his parents are deceased.
So did you know him growing up?
No, I did and I didn't know him. You know, I knew him, but I didn't know him. You know, I wasn't real familiar with him.
So how did you get together?
Well, he just came to visit one evening, and I had no idea that, you know, he was just coming to see me, you know, but, and the relationship grew from there. But he, you know, it wasn't anything that, because I was a senior in high school and he was already out of school, you know. And I guess my mother figured that he was a little old for me to date, but the relationship just grew from there.
How much older is he than you?
4 years.
Well, that's not much, is it?
No, but, you know,
but your
when
mother.
You're in high school,
right,
and they're already out and
yeah.
stuff. And Julian is a licensed barber.
Mm-hmm.
He did that for several years, but being in within this area, you know, there wasn't really any money into it. But and then, he's a disabled coal miner right now.
Oh, is he? So he worked in the mines.
He worked in the coal mines from 76 to 89.
When he was a barber, his place of business was. Was he doing hair for both black and white?
No, just black.
Just black. And because there were so few blacks in the area.
Oh, he had business.
He had business.
He had plenty of business. But basically, he didn't. His busiest time was like the weekends, Friday and Saturday, you know.
And then just not enough business during the week?
No, not during the week because basically, people in the area got paid on Friday.
Right.
They got their hair cut on Fridays, got the children's hair cut on Fridays. And then he might do a few heads during the week, but not that much. You know? And then a haircut, at the time, a haircut didn't cost but a dollar.
Right, okay. When did you first begin to think about discrimination as a black person?
I don't know. Valerie realized, you know, that, you know, what discrimination was and that it was here. But, you know, being born in a situation you knew what your limitations were, so you just, you know, just didn't go beyond them, you know.
Was there ever a time, though, when something happened, or you, either to you or to someone else that you witnessed, that you said, I'm just not going to stand for that anymore, that's wrong?
No.
No.
Not that I can remember. I could have said, but I don't remember.
Okay.
Because I don't remember any bad incidents happening in Middlesboro, you know, or that.
Were there, in the 60s when we had the sit-ins and the demonstrations and whatnot, did any of those happen in Middlesboro?
No, you never had any activists in Middlesboro.
Okay, so no one trying to open up the lunch counter?
No.
Or the theater or whatnot? How about, are there any parks, city parks, that were separate?
No, we don't have any. The only parks that we have, I guess when they built the swimming pool, everything was integrated, I'd say.
It's already integrated.
I'd say. But the parks, we only have the national park out here, and then you have the state park down there in Pineville, but we don't have any city parks either.
Do you remember the whole war on poverty in the 60s, and did that affect this county at all? Were there VISTA volunteers that came in, and community action program, Head Start programs?
Yes, they had a Head Start program at one time. And then they had a community, and they still have a community action program going. But just what, you know, what they're doing right now, I don't know.
Okay. But, were you ever involved with any of
them? Well, I worked with the community action from 72 to 70. Child care, and and families, you know, that needed that had children within a certain range. You had to be within a certain income bracket to qualify for this, but they had centers set up in Bell County for the child care. And what I did was work with the families of the children that attended the child care centers. I basically, you know, would try to work with the children that were at home that were too young to go, you know, try to teach them some of the same things that they were teaching the kids, you know, mobility, coordination and stuff like that. Then we furnished information to the parent or parents of the children. We furnished transportation to places that they may need to go, doctor, welfare office, or we had information to them about things that were available for them. We tried to get those that didn't have like the high school education to get the GEDs, or to, if they did, to try to get into some type of training, prepare themselves for the day when their children would come off of welfare.
Were there black families that received assistance from those programs as well as white?
Yes.
Do you think people, both black and white, were treated the same?
Yes.
You do?
Okay.
How did you become involved with the Democracy Resource Center?
Well, I worked with another agency before, Black Mountain Improvement Association, which they had in set up like a tutoring program in Bell and Knox County for black students. And I'm sure they did other things, you know, but trying to help the black student was one of their main things. But anyway, when Black Mountain Improvement went out.
This would have been about when now? What time period?
This was in the 90s, early 90s.
Black Mountain.
Black Mountain Improvement, yeah. So was in the early 90s. The director over Black Mountain, BMIA is what we called it shortly.
I'm sorry, say
BMIA.
BMIA.
That was just short for Black Mountain Improvement Association. Renee Scott, I think, is maybe on the board of Democracy Resource. And when I first got involved with it, it wasn't Democracy, it was Kentucky Local Governance. And I guess they were branching out into different counties. Because they were involved with government, local governments, they were wanting people to get involved with their local government and stuff. Well, getting involved with local government in this area is just a little more than people would want to do. So what we did was to continue to tutor. It has helped. We learned a lot from Democracy Resource. We got to know quite a few people through Black Mountain Improvement and Democracy Resource. We have found that, you know, through being involved with these agencies and things, you learn a lot. You know how to find out how to go about getting to the people or to the things that you need to, whereas if you had not been involved, you wouldn't know, especially living in an area like this, you know. Now, we did with the Black Mountain, with Democracy Resource, Kentucky Local Governors, I don't know if they had changed their name at the time or not, but we did get involved with getting some blacks hired when they opened the tunnel over here.
Opened the tunnel over to,
Cumberland Gap? Tunnel. Okay. When they started the procedures for their opening, they had no blacks in their employment. And
that was about when? When did the tunnel open?
It's been open 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
But personally, I didn't get deeply involved because I didn't really, I couldn't for my job and stuff like that, but I did have play a role in getting them some of the information and the people and things that they needed to do and know in order to do what they had to do for getting someone hired. And I think since then, there maybe there has been 3 blacks or maybe 4 hired over there. Maybe there's 3 or 4 working there now. I'm not quite sure.
So
we did get in through Democracy Resource, and John Cleveland, who used to work with Democracy Resource, and we did get Reverend Lewis Coleman, who is an activist in Louisville, to come to Middlesboro and give us instructions and directions and information on what we need to do to
What did you need to do? How did you go about that?
They got a copy of I can't really tell. He came, he gave us names and information about people to contact.
But basically, you organized pressure.
I organized the meeting for him to come. And,
you organized the meeting?
The meeting, yeah.
How did you do that?
Well, I called through John Cleveland. Reverend Coleman is on the board for Democracy Research. So, I talked with John Cleveland, and he got in touch with Reverend Coleman, and then maybe I may have talked to him a couple of times, and we set up a date and time for him to come, and then went through some of the people that were involved with the local governance at the time. We just got the word out that he was going to be there, you know, and if you were interested in hearing what he had to say. And these were basically people that had applied for employment at the time and stuff. And we had a very good turnout. You know.
Where did you
meet? We met in the Methodist Church Fellowship Hall.
And when you say you put the word out, did you do a mailing?
Did you call on the telephone? Door-to-door
word-of-mouth
type
went
thing.
Door-to-door?
Not really, but, you know,
right.
Word-of-mouth telephone type thing. The person that was really directly involved in this tunnel issue, the employment at the tunnel issue, is a male, and you may want to talk to him when you start talking to males.
What is his name?
His name is Edward Ballinger.
Okay. Tell me who Renee Scott is.
Renee Scott was the director of Black Mountain Improvement Association.
Okay. Was she black?
Uh-huh.
She was. Was she from the area?
No, she. I'm thinking Renee is from... She's either originally from South Carolina or Georgia, but she's been in Kentucky for a while, and she's still in Kentucky. I think she works for the state now, but she lives in Berea. Liz Nader, she's on the board for Democracy Resource, or she was. I haven't seen her in several years.
Well, it sounds, you were saying that you couldn't be too out there because of your job and all. Were you obviously were fearful that you might lose your job for being out front?
Well, no, I didn't mean be out there. I couldn't get. Now, see, when I was with Democracy Resource, it was like part-time stuff.
So a lot you of worked things, for the Democracy Resource Center?
Uh-huh. Oh. And a lot of things that you might need to do, maybe during the time that, say, I have a full-time job, during the time that I couldn't be out there doing it, you know, like, I would coordinate things, get it together so, you know, that we could have, you know, our different functions or do, you know, make the telephone calls or whatever. But for a lot of the footwork I did not do. I couldn't do it because of the availability of my time.
Right,
you know?
Okay. It sounds, Esther, that somewhere over the years, you got more assertive in terms, I mean, that your involvement with the Democracy Resource Center, the work to get blacks hired over at Cumberland. What happened over the way? Did you get angry?
When?
That's what I'm...
Why am I not active?
No,
active
it
now?
Sounds like you are active now.
No, I'm not as active now as I was. You know, working for Democracy Resource, Black Mountain Improvement was funded programs, and they just kind of, you know, lost their grants and stuff.
Okay. But somewhere were those, it sounds like they were more than just paid jobs for you.
Well, you really get into what you're doing. But in dealing with people, it's not very easy. And if you get to the point where you feel like you are not accomplishing anything, then it's best to just, you know, let it alone. Bell County is a poor county, a depressed county, and when you're dealing with people, and I'm talking about black people because I didn't deal with white people in either one of these programs. You have a tendency to get just a little bit disturbed when people don't cooperate and you're trying to help, you know. But you do get involved, and you get involved, you know, probably a little more than you intended to. Mm-hmm. It's all worthwhile if you can see a finished product.
Have you and your husband ever thought about leaving Bell County?
Mm-hmm.
Moving away?
Mm-hmm. We have several times, and but then you think, well, you know, you're not getting younger, any younger, you know. Of course, my husband is disabled, and as far as I'm concerned, I still need to work for a few more days. And, you know, when you get a little age on you, it's kind of hard to get employed when you're not certified. And I have no certifications of any kind.
And you work for the school system now,
mm-hmm.
in the cafeteria.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How long have you been doing that?
For 3 years.
Okay.
But before that, I worked for JCPenney's for 13 years. And before that, I worked with the Community Action but I hadn't worked for about 7 or 8 years because a year after my second child was born, I had to quit and I just didn't go back working until he was like in the second grade, until after he got into school.
What did you do at JCPenney's all those years?
Well, I was a sales clerk. Then I worked in stock the last 4 years that I worked there. I worked in stock.
Were there any problems for you there in terms of being a black employee?
No. But I made some great friends.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, let me just
see. Can you help? Because I said, I don't know anything about 1930, stone down, you know. And in June of last year, I lost my mother. And it was sort of like, it happened quickly, I'll just say it that way. And whenever we or ask a question or anything come up that we don't know, we would always go to her. And my sister and I have a tendency to say, well, I picked up the phone to call mom to ask a question, you know. Or I would say, well, my mama would knows that, you know. But, and it's getting that way. Anybody that could give you any information are gone.
When you were growing up and attended the Lincoln School, and there was a white school. What was the name of the white school?
Millsboro.
Millsboro.
Well, you had Middlesboro High School, and then you had Central School, which was the elementary school, and then you had Millsboro Junior High. There was three schools for whites.
Were there any differences that you were aware of between the black and the white schools?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I never was in any of the schools, but you could, whenever they sent, you got books and things, they were used books and stuff because they were ragged and written in and stuff like that. You know, there was a difference. We never had a science room. You know, they set a lab table in one of the rooms in the school, but they never connected it up, you know. So what good was the table if you didn't have the other stuff to go with it?
Right. Was there a PTA?
At our school, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you remember anything about it? Was your mother active in the PTA? Or?
Yes, but I can't tell you anything. Okay. No, I don't remember.
Okay. Did you grow up in a church, Esther?
Yes, I belonged to Mamaroneck Baptist Church, and I became a member at the age of 7. My family was and is Baptist. My grandfather was a musician for one of the choirs there until he became ill and could no longer function. But I still attend that church.
Okay. Mount Moriah,
M-O-R-I-A-H.
Okay. Was there ever anything in the congregation, in the sermons, that talked about equal rights for blacks, that blacks should have equal rights?
I'm sure there was.
Were there ever any meetings that you attended or that you heard about of people in the church who were interested in seeing things change here?
No, not that I know of.
Okay, okay. Did you tell me that you belong to the NAACP?
I did, but they're not active right now.
Okay. Were they, when were they active here in Middlesbrough?
I became a part of it in the late 70s. And I'd say up until just a few years ago, maybe sometimes in the 80s. You know, they maybe, well, they're just not as active as they were. But before I became a member, I don't remember, you know, just how active it was.
Did your mother or your grandparents ever belong to the NAACP?
Yes, they did. I can remember, you know, hearing them talking about, you know, being a part of the NAACP, but just what they did or how active they were, I don't know.
But the time that you were active, what was going on within the organization at that point? Did you have meetings? Did you raise money for any projects? Were there any issues that the chapter was working on?
I don't remember.
Okay.
But this, the man that I gave you, the name was the president. He was one of the presidents.
Is that Edward?
Ballinger.
Ballinger. He was the president.
He was one of the presidents.
They ever have any women presidents?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No, I remember him and two other fellas. One of the other men that was president is deceased now. And the other one, I don't know. I haven't seen him for a while, but he may be still in Millsboro.
Okay. Let me talk about voting and elections. Do you belong to a political party? Do you vote?
I'm registered Democrat, but I'm not active with any party.
Okay. And your husband?
He's a registered Democrat.
Okay. Have there ever been issues that you can recall in the black community that people thought they should get out and vote for a particular candidate? Because that would be more helpful to the black community?
I'm sure there has been. Mm-hmm. I just can't, not thinking very well right now, but, and I know that it's your right and your duty to vote, but personally, if I don't believe in you, I'm not going to vote. I don't care who you are. You know, whether you're Democrat, Republican, or what, you know, and I just, I have problems with politics, so I just don't get involved in it. But I do vote, and I vote on a regular basis, but I don't get into it.
Okay. Who were your heroes when you were growing up?
I guess I had any other than my mom, and you know, because until I was a big kid, we didn't own, the only thing we had was radio, you know. Mm-hmm. I wasn't into sports or anything like that, and if you went to the movies, all they were was cowboys and Indians, so nobody, you know, I don't I guess my mom was black.
Any musicians that you might have heard on the radio or had records or?
Well, I liked all the rock and roll, whatever. At that point, I remember very well.
One last question. In the history of African Americans in this country, from slavery to civil rights, there's been progress, I think we'd agree. Where do you think blacks are in American society today? What do you think?
I don't think they're where they should be. And there has been progress, and quite a bit of progress, and there are quite a few blacks that are in positions that they should be in, and I'm sure there are quite a few blacks are in positions they shouldn't be in, you know, but I do feel, and of course, in this area, you can't be in competition too much because there's not that much, you know, for a competition, unless you are in politics or you're certified in, but say a teacher, or you have to be in the medical field or something for it to be worthwhile around here as far as salaries are concerned. But the one thing that my husband and I did and worked hard to do was to educate our children so that they would not have to stay in this area and accept, you know, whatever.
Tell me about your children. You have two boys?
I have two boys. They're 10 years apart. My oldest is 34, my youngest is 24. They were both born here in Middlesboro. They both attended the Middlesboro City Schools. And they both attended Kentucky State University. They both have bachelor's degree. My oldest has a master's degree, and my youngest is presently working on his master's. The oldest is married and lives in Forsyth, Kentucky, and has one child. The youngest is still a single man.
The youngest
is still single.
Uh-huh, okay. And how old is the grandchild?
2 years old.
2 years, a little one, okay. Yeah,
so. But my oldest son is a research analyst for legislative research, and my youngest works for the Revenue Cabinet.
And how do you think life is different for them today than it was for you when you were 34 years old? Or 24 years old.
Okay, at 24 years old. The struggle was just, I guess you're just in the middle of the struggle. At 24, I guess, where I was at the point where I could go in and apply for a job in a store or something like that, you know, making whatever minimum wage was, maybe no more than $2 an hour. I'm just happy that my children don't have to depend on that.
Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I don't think so.